We go to the Rebel Wireless Hotline, and we welcome in Bernie Kosar for his regular spot on this show. And, Bernie, let's talk about the wide receivers, and not because of Josh Gordon's suspension. I know that's been hammered to death. I want to take it more in the direction of what else we can see emerge with or without Gordon in the lineup. And the thing that I keep coming back to, the thing that really gets me fired up about training camp, is watching finally David Nelson take the field, come back from that knee injury, knee surgery that he had, and be able to show us what a 6'5" target he could be.
Well, I think we talked last week about the really need for a Greg Little, Jordan Cameron to stay healthy. There's no doubt about that. But you're seeing, and especially in Chud and North's offense, you really see the multiple formations, the multiple personnel groups, even more so today.
Right.
If you get Jordan Cameron healthy at his size, and David Nelson, who years ago I think was under Urban Meyer at the University of Florida, he used him in all kinds of creative ways to really showcase his athleticism. So a guy like that, coming off an ACL injury, which years ago was a serious injury, with the upgrades and medicine and stuff, that is something now. He's had enough time pass and enough physical therapy to pass where he should be at his peak condition. So using those different personnel groupings with a guy like David Nelson, who is coming out of his fourth year from Buffalo as a free agent and coming off the ACL, being 6'5", having that athleticism. I think he was a quarterback in high school, being a little biased, but I think he'll have a good overall understanding of the game. He could be a guy that's used in different personnel groupings, in different formations, and definitely you could create some mismatches with his size and speed over some of the defensive backs.
Yeah, that's the thing that stands out when you watch tape of this guy, is there really never seems to be a good way for a defense to cover him. And he's always, regardless of the type of pattern he's running, he's always obviously utilizing not only that advantage in height, but really good body control, good jumping ability, and he runs really good routes. I mean, that's the guy that I got used to seeing in that time in Buffalo, and he was the specialist. I mean, he wasn't like their number one person, but he was their person who could do some things, especially when others were drawing coverage attention, like Stevie Johnson and so forth. So, in with the Browns, the equivalent I'm thinking is obviously once Gordon is out there and playing, but also with Greg Little, also with Devon Bess, and I'm thinking when those other people do their thing, it seems natural for David Nelson to be involved and be the guy who's open for the big play. I mean, I'm thinking especially red zone, especially goal line plays, he's going to be someone that will almost always be there as an option for Brandon Whedon to hit in the end zone.
Well, I do think the model has been set over the last few years by watching Aaron Hernandez and Kronk in New England, seeing two big, strong, fast, tight end types, receiver types, putting duress on the secondary. You almost always will find or be able to find a mismatch when you put two and three bigger tight ends and receivers out there. The defensive backs in this league just don't go across the board big enough, strong enough, and fast enough to match up when you put two or three guys in there that are 6'5", 260, running a 4.55, and that's not even counting Greg Little at 60.5, 220,
right,
running a 4.4.
Right, right. Yeah, that's an addition to, exactly. And here's the other thing, Bernie. You can, I'm guessing, put guys like that into tight end type of plays, right? You can take a David Nelson because of his size and I think relative strength, although he's not an overpowering athlete, but I think he's a strong enough guy, and I'm going to presume while he's recovering from this knee injury that he's able to do a fair amount of work with Brad Rohl to just develop himself physically and could be strong enough to handle some of those tight end routes as well.
Well, again, we're watching the model being established in New England, and then also with Sean Payton and Jimmy Graham down in New Orleans. Not only could you utilize the tight end routes, in especially the red zone and that third and 3-5 range, but you could also take it a step further, and you're seeing the creative teams, the vertical teams, use, especially in the red zone, use the tight end in wide receiver positions where you could really get a mismatch. You could really get that guy isolated on one side of the field with just maybe one strong safety or one weak safety lined up head up against a tight end going the other way and going to play the wide receiver position. So either way, it sometimes will put duress on the defensive matchups.
Bernie Kosar joins us on the Revel Wireless Hotline on Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford. So, Bernie, as we shift over to the defensive side of the ball, you know, an interesting thing I think has evolved through this offseason, and that is, and people I think have looked at it with a certain amount of surprise, which I guess makes sense because Jabal Sheard, from defensive end to outside linebacker, is undergoing a pretty big transition. That's not a small thing to do, and he's doing it at least against air and in these workouts in a way that is impressing a whole lot of people on both sides of the ball. I mean, you're hearing it from, you know, people who are on the outside watching, either reporters and so forth, just standing out at practices and have watched those workouts and seen the way he moves. But then it's the comments that you hear from coaches, starting with Brian Baker, the outside linebackers coach, but I'm also hearing it from the offensive side of the ball, how impressed that group is with how Sheard is moving and what he's doing. And it just seems like putting him in this position where he's standing up almost seems more natural than when he was a defensive lineman, which of course was his position coming out of Pitt as well, and that's where he had lined up for the past two seasons with the Browns.
Well, from a player, an old player perspective, and no disrespect to the media, but from a player, old player perspective to a current player perspective, you definitely like having your coaches offensively and defensively being the ones that are complimenting you and seeing that you're able to do the job. You know, we've talked a lot about this in the offseason with Ray Horton's defensive scheme. This isn't going to be a tentative sit-back play along the zone 75% of the time. You're talking about a defensive scheme that I think led the league on blitzing last year. So, yeah, he's going to be up more in an outside backer position on first and second down. Still probably have his hand in the dirt on third down. But this is something where he's doing something that he's been doing his whole life, and it's rushing the quarterback. And albeit it's going from a 4-3 to a 3-4, and he'll be dropping some in zone, still the number one premise of this defense and of and being asked of Jabal Sheard is to get after the quarterback, to rush the quarterback, to get pressure, to get sacks. And I don't think that responsibility has changed much from last year to this year.
I think another factor in this is something that was really lacking for Jabal Sheard these past two seasons as a defensive end, and that is another rushing force, pass rushing force, to really take away some blocking attention from him. So when he's lining up there now and Paul Kruger's on the other side, you know, that would be one thing to certainly trigger that. And I think just the thought that Barkevious Mingo is going to be in the mix and rushing the passer, that you've got Quentin Groves also as part of this group, and the various combinations of personnel that Ray Horton and this defensive scheme are able to put out there, I think also influence the way blockers have to deal with Sheard now as well. There's far less of that sense of, well, if you take him away, you've taken away essentially the teeth of the Browns pass rush. That's no longer the case.
Well, Vic, that's a great point. To be able just to isolate on Jabal now, like at times teams did last year, is going to be increasingly more challenging with, just like you astutely point out, with the multiple personnel groups, the different guys, and there's better pass rushers spread out across the board now where our defense is going to be able to create duress in more than one point or more than one situation. So offenses are going to need to play it a little more across the board and not be able to gamble and just take a guy or two out, because one of the staples, again, of the Ray Horton, Dick LeBeau type of system, is I tend to be in different spots in different personnel groups over different down and distances. So it makes it that much more challenging to lock in on any one particular guy in any one set.
Right. And Bernie, we've talked from time to time on this show, but let's cover this at least, because it's been a fairly prominent story. You know, the individuals involved, especially one individual involved, Bill Belichick, but the New England Patriots deciding to add Tim Tebow to their roster from the standpoint of what Tebow is not as a quarterback, not a passer, not a guy who really looks like he could have any kind of a sustainable quarterbacking career in this league. Where else could this make sense? And does it make sense that you think of this guy maybe as a potential? You brought up the tight end situation there and how well the Patriots have utilized it. They've also got a challenge because Rob Gronkowski is undergoing more back surgery. Aaron Hernandez has had trouble staying healthy. Could you see a future in Tebow as a tight end or something other than quarterback for the Pats?
Well, here's what I think happened with that situation. If you really look at the New England Patriots, the only way they probably don't stand a chance to win is if Tom Brady gets hurt. That takes away most of their consistency and their leader, their playmaker of the team. I don't see him much as a tight end. I watched him run some routes with the Jets over the last year or so, and he just doesn't have that natural fluidness in and out of his breaks, things of that nature. I really think he's here to be the third quarterback, and if, God forbid, something happens to Tom Brady, I think Bill Belichick, all bets are off what they're going to try to do offensively. And then in the short run of a few games, which hopefully that would be all that a guy like Tom Brady is out, you could be creative. You could throw off utilities. You could do different things. Because although I agree with you, Tim Tebow hasn't showed maybe the ability to consistently over multiple years, over 16-game schedules, be that consistent leader in quarterbacking a given team. He has showed an incredible resourcefulness to pull out games and to pull out wins. And if something happens to Tom Brady, all I think New England's going to try to be doing is figuring out any way they can to pull out wins. And I think that's kind of the insurance policy that I think Tim Tebow brings to the Patriots.
Right. Well, it'll be interesting to see how that whole thing kind of plays itself out. It'll be one of the more curious situations, I think, in this league. Bernie, thank you so much, and we'll catch up with you again soon, my friend.
Sounds good.
All right, he is Bernie Kosar. He joins us on the Rebel Wireless Hotline on Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford, and we've got much more coming up for you on ESPN 850 WKNR.